how do you elevate that interviewing experience, that interviewing process, so you can get the most of that interview, right? And that's the thing that we need to, that's a thing I believe we need to start thinking about with AI.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. This is the show where we talk to executives and founders who are disrupting companies and industries around what they see uniquely in identifying top talent. If this is your first episode, welcome. We are glad to have you. If you're our longtime listeners, thank you so much for your continued support. Please, everybody, download and subscribe on Apple and Spotify and give us a high rating. It really helps the podcast. On today's episode, we have a very special guest. I'm so excited to bring you Martin Robati. He is the global head of HR of engineering at BNY Mellon. Martin, how are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
You got it. I love your background. I love some good art. You're up in New York. How was your Thanksgiving? Did you have a good break?
I had a very good break. Actually, I'm in Florida, in Pompano Beach. Still have a place here. Very fortunate. All these things are from Peru, so I'm glad you like them, right?
I love it. I didn't know that you were in Pompano Beach. You are only 15 minutes south or north of where I am right now. So we could have done this one in person. Martin, I'm really excited to have you here. I want to understand a little bit about BNY Mellon's obviously this big global organization. What drew you to the organization and what excited you about this role in particular?
Well, they reached out to me and that was in 2018. And one of the things that I like very much is that they wanted to do a big transformation in the technology organization. At that moment, we call it technology. Now it's called engineering. They want to invest a lot on new platforms, new systems, large enterprise-wide projects that the bank has not done for many, many years, right? So it was a very important transformation for the bank. I'm going to talk a little bit more about what we do in BNY. And then there is a people component there, right? So that connects a lot with people. Upskilling, reskilling, developing talent, hiring the right talent. So it was very exciting, huge investment, growth opportunities. So I decided to join them. That was in 2018. So I left Florida and moved to New York. Here we are.
So tell me, I know a lot of people who've done the reverse. They've come from New York down to Florida. You did the reverse. How was the, was it a culture shock for you? I mean, obviously it's very different professionally there. I know they're from doing a lot of work with our company up there, opposed to here in our home state of Florida. What was the difference for you? What was kind of the biggest kind of change for you in terms of lifestyle?
Yeah, lifestyle was, it was a little bit shocking. I was working at that moment, worked many years in Sydney. And I was reporting to New York and doing a lot of projects, but always, the last 5, 6, 7 years, based in Florida. It was a kind of a shock because the pace, particularly the pace of how things happen. Very quick, very fast. You need to deliver, right? The quality of talent, the quality of people that you meet with, the meetings, discussions are very elevated, right? So you need to up your game, right? To be very, stay competitive, stay relevant. So I like that. And then you get in touch with a lot of the things that we read in books, right? So they happen there, they are tested there. But the pace was the first thing I was very, very surprised. Very people going to the office very early in the morning, full all day. And 5 p.m., 5:30, go home, and then next day, yeah.
Come back. When I first started working there, so we obviously started in South Florida, and then New York was kind of our next office and where we started doing work. And the pace of the way work gets done and the caliber of the people that you meet with, we were working with companies like Blackstone, Morgan Stanley, Citadel, some of the biggest, you know, investment banks and financial services organizations in the world. And what I would tell you is that everybody that I would meet with up there, 10 times out of 10, you'd know why they had the job. I wouldn't necessarily love everybody I met, but you know how talented they were, how intellectual they were. And quite honestly, it was very motivating and very driving for me. We have an office up there in Midtown Manhattan still. I'm going up there in a few weeks myself. I love doing work there, but you're right. It is a big adjustment. And that's from working in Dallas and Nashville and Toronto and even Los Angeles and Chicago, other big cities. There's nothing like work in New York.
Yeah.
That's, I want to take it.
Yeah. That's,
you agree?
Yeah, I fully agree. And then the other thing is that I used to do a lot of work. Used to work with a lot of people in New York in my role at Citi.
Ooh.
Work around Latin America, right? But then the other thing on the culture is the pace, the quality of talent, but then the people is very direct, right? So it is what it is. You like it or not, but we're professionals and you keep moving forward, right? And what's next, right? So yeah, so I completely agree.
Yeah.
Good. I love that. I love that for you. So I want to move into talking about a subject that is very on the tip of everybody's tongue. It's been something that's really dominated our news cycles and particularly technology news cycles over the last 24 months, and it's AI. And so it's impacting all of us on a day-to-day basis. I think that one of the things I genuinely believe is the innovation outpaces the adoption at this point, but it's only a matter of time before this is completely intertwined in everybody's day-to-day life as a consumer, everybody's business day-to-day, if it's not already. And so my question for you is, what is the approach BNY Mellon is taking to artificial intelligence, particularly in HR?
Yeah, that's a good question. AI is evolving very fast. I would say in the last 2-3 years, I've seen a lot of developments, and now you can access that in your phone, right? With ChatGPT. If you use the Microsoft Suite, you have Copilot, and it's how helpful. But there are other options like Copilot, right? So it has evolved significantly in the last 3 years. What we are doing in BNY is that we have an AI group, an AI unit, or we call it the AI hub. I would say probably the last 2 years when we started putting a lot of effort, investment, and a lot of resources was to develop the framework and develop the infrastructure from a technology perspective. So each one of the businesses, the technology groups that support each one of the businesses can develop from that baseline solutions for the businesses, right? So we spend, the team spend a good amount of time developing what we call ELISA, which is our AI tool. The second thing that group did, and it was in partnership with the HR team, with the people team, was to develop training for all our employees. Actually, everyone can take the training. It doesn't matter if you're in engineering, if you're in sales, if you're in HR, if you're in finance. So we put with them basic training, right, for how to do AI in a responsible way, right? So there are a lot of things and access to proprietary information from the firm that we need to be very careful of how we use it, right? But then on top of that is how you can use those tools to develop things for your own day-to-day work, right? So that training broke all the records, right? So we have a lot of people doing that training, the AI training, not only the engineering ones, the engineering employees, but across the firm, right? So that was the first thing, develop the framework, then do the training across the firm. And then this group, because there are a lot of things in the pipeline to develop, right? But we cannot develop everything at once. It's kind of a learning process. So they are developing pieces and tools for our sales area, right? Relationship managers, how they can leverage all the information that we have from our clients, right? To be more effective by using that information, right? Now the other teams like finance, HR, legal are also using it. I particularly have used ELISA. I created a chat for me, one analysis that I was doing. And one of the analyses was very focused on analyzing and digesting responses for a group of 2,000 people, 2,500 people, right? And then combining that with engagement surveys, right? Combining those results with the results of our engagement survey, and then share that with the leaders of this group, right? And define the people plans, what we're gonna do with this group of employees in our plan for 2025, right? So those are the things that you can do like this, analyze data, like having a supercomputer, right? Gives you the data the way you want it, the way you need it, and then I think the most important thing is that when you combine with other those data inputs, you combine them with other data input, it gets really the value added that you really expect, right? And then you can have a very educated conversation with the business leaders and define plans, address that right areas, right? And define plans for 2025. That's one example that I personally did for one of the groups I support in the engineering organization.
Right? Yeah, I find is you're in the cross section of engineering HR, and so you're able to leverage this in a way that maybe other typical HR leaders are not able to do, more broad based HR leaders. And so your knowledge in this space is very, very acute. I'd ask you this: how do you know what your competitors are doing? Like, are you staying abreast of, like, do you have meetups for dinner? Is it that people are coming and going from their organization to your organization? How are you staying aware of what everyone else is doing in this space and making sure that you're keeping pace?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Talent acquisition, right? So we interview people all the time. People want to join our firm. And in some way, we know what other firms are developing, right? So we get to know. It's not that they are exposing what they are doing, right? But you understand when you have open roles and some people apply from other banks, hey, what approach they are taking, how developed they are or not, right? Or how competitive they are or not. Then the second thing is networking, right? So I do like this, right, myself. A lot of my engineering colleagues network with other banks, right, with all the other firms. There are different forums that they participate. And they expose what the products that they are developing, right? It's like a fair where they expose the different products, the different developments, right? So we get that. Some of the we also get input from consultants, right? So they do surveys, and then many consultant firms analyze that, and they can provide input where some of the banks are going, what direction they are taking. Not all of us compete in the same business, right? We have different groups of business that we target. But it's a mix of everything, right? It's like a mix of like the compensation service, right? It's kind of that, yeah.
Keeping aware of what's going on. I love that. What about, you know, you mentioned that a lot of the engineers have been reaching out to you, particularly around building HR technology. What are you hearing from the tech sector, and what are you telling them are areas of needs and opportunity?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm part of a group of HR colleagues, but basically from different states and also New York, San Francisco, right? It's called People Tech Enterprise, and I was pulled there by one of my friends. He used to work in HR in Goldman Sachs. And then he said to me, why don't you join us? This is what we are doing. And basically what we are doing is we are trying to help all these different engineers that are developing products for talent acquisition, benefits, surveys, and so on how to develop those products the right way. So the future of work has some direction that probably those who work in HR or with people understand better, right? So we want them to develop the products in the right direction so the future HR leaders have the right tools and know they need to adjust to the tools that are available, right? It's connecting what the future will be with the right tools so the employee experience, manager experience, and the HR manager experience will be great. So going back to your question, I was approached by this group, right? And there are some of these engineers developing tools like the business that you have, right? Talent acquisition, right? And they approach and hey, this is the way we want to scan the resumes. This is the way we want to process the resumes. This is how the questions should come, right? So great developments, great structure on the products that they are developing. On the skills, on medical benefits, options, and so on. But I think the most important benefits for us is to provide flexibility, right? I see flexibility coming closer and closer to what HR managers want and what employees would love to have in their companies, right?
I think these different options, thanks to AI, will provide more flexibility in the future and an easy way to digest all that data without being bombarded with a lot of brochures for benefits and so on. So we are helping them. It's kind of an advice on the general direction. And yeah, it's very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's a very exciting space. I feel like most HR technology has been a laggard. There's very few real strong end-to-end solutions. I don't know, there's a ton of technology and products that people just love to use, right? And so I think there's such a big area of opportunity here. It's why I've dedicated much of my career over the last 4 years to developing software. And it just so happens that generative AI has allowed the potential and possibility of what can be done happen way sooner than I ever thought. And I'm so excited about that. One of the things that I thought you brought up that's really key is there's a dynamism, there's a fluidity of people aspects, right? Whether it be an interview process or performance reviews or, right? And that, and typically technology to some degree has been somewhat rigid in these structures,
yep.
Whereas AI allows for a lot more fluidity, right? Of a dynamic hiring process or, you know, of a way of being predictive about somebody staying with your organization long-term or how you develop your employees, right? Learning and development. Because not everybody learns the same way. So like having this cookie cutter type, you know, out of the box solution, like it's not as impactful or as effective as it could be when you can really be more nuanced and more intuitive on the individual that make up, you know, 5,000 plus of those at BNY Mellon and big, large organizations. So that's what really excites me. You know, what we're doing with Aon, right? We want to revolution the hiring space. We really want to change the way that the hiring manager and candidate experiences, but also really be more predictive and certain around hiring outcomes. What do you think AI can do? You mentioned a little bit about resume and question generation. Yeah. What do you think AI can really impact hiring? And what do you think about the area that I told you that we're focused on? Do you think that's an area that's a big opportunity, that there's big, you know, blue ocean there, so to speak, in terms of of upgrading?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of and more applications and software and tools that are coming, and then they get funds and they grow and develop, and there are so many companies across the world that can use it. I think the talent acquisition space is a very interesting and important one, right? For me, hiring decisions are the most important ones. I learned that many, many years ago. And then because it's a decision to bring someone that brings value to the company, or you could not bring value to the company, right? And sometimes you pay a lot for some hires, right? So it's irreversible resources that if they are not allocated in the right way, it could create a lot of disruption, not only with the person that you hired, but the whole department that this person worked with, right? So I've seen so many examples in my career, right? So I think that talent acquisition is great. One of the things that I always push my managers in my years at Citi, BNY Mellon, and all the firms that I work is to do the right interviews, to do good interviews, to take interviews training, right? So because it's very important to keep the standards that you want to have in your firm, right? And when you talk about large companies, global companies with global reach, of course, the talent is different, right? Educational levels are different, right? But you need to keep some certain standard, right? And sometimes that doesn't happen. And then most of the decision is not only on the HR side, but it's also on the hiring manager side, right? And I've done a lot of training, a lot of interview training for managers, right? And one of the things with the talent acquisition team we did in BNY and also in Citi, right? Bar raiser interviews, right? How do we keep high standard, right? And certify certain interviewers to be in those interviews, right? With AI, which is very helpful, but a lot of resources, right? But with AI, what you can achieve is that standardization, right? You get not only the resume scan, which is what LinkedIn does and all these other tools, right? But then when you are doing the interview, imagine that we are doing the interview right now and this is for a senior role, right? And you have the set of questions that you usually ask for senior roles, and then the tool helps you. Hey, don't forget about this question. This question should be done this way, right?
because the profile that you're looking is. So that helped to gather information for a hiring manager, right, to make a better informed decision about a judgment call is super important. And anyway, if you analyze all that and debrief and send it to the talent acquisition team, it gets very powerful, right? It's not only about a lot of people have been talking about this, about efficiency, right? Cut resources, right? We're going to save in the number of recruiters away. I think that, yes, efficiency is one of the points, but it's not the main point. I think the main point is how do you elevate that interviewing experience, that interviewing process, so you can get the most of that interview, right? And that's the thing that we need to, that's the thing I believe we need to start thinking about with AI, right? So, and that helps a lot. On the other side, a candidate gets very well prepared too, right? But that standardization for me is a winning game, right? For firms, for recruiting teams, and for HR teams. Right?
Have you seen anything close to that vision?
Yeah. There are some tools that help you do that, right? So there's one engineer that developed something to help you on the in the interview process, right? So you first need to have the role, right? And then you have to define the skills of the role, right? Depending on the seniority of the role, what type of questions you're going to ask. You provide that to the different interviewers, right? So then the interviewers start doing that, and then they get reminded, and then you check the 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, how much this person has of that certain skills, and then it gets compiled with additional commentary, right? So yeah, there are some of them getting very close, yeah, to that.
Yeah, Martin, you've described exactly what we've built. So I'm going to talk to our mutual friend Tomas. I want to schedule a demo with you and get your opinion. One of the things that I would tell you is that, and I mean no disrespect to this, but we're not software people building software. We're people that have been doing this for 15 years. We've been in the trenches with companies the size of BNY Mellon, even a little bit bigger, and startups and everything in between.
Oh, yeah.
We've done 15,000 corporate hires in 43 different countries, and we learned a lot and gained a lot of success factor data around what makes a great interview, what are the factors that contribute to somebody that gets promoted that has long tenure, how do we structure interviews in a way where hiring managers are not just getting better longer term by using your tool, but they're getting better and tighter information in interview to make better decisions. So I'm excited to share that with you. I appreciate that. I'm so glad you said that. We didn't talk about that at all beforehand, but I totally agree with your vision, and we've been working on that for a few years now. So I'm excited to share it with you. I want to take this in a little bit of a different direction, because we have all these amazing thought leaders, right, that have so much knowledge. But I want to get to the personal side of things. So one of the things that was really interesting to me about you is that you're on the board of the American Dog Society.
Yep.
I want to know this. When did you get your first dog? What type of dog was it? And do you have dogs now?
Yeah. The first dog that's a very nice question. The first dog I got was when I was probably 5-7 years, probably around that. It was a German Shepherd. It was given to me by my dad. The dog was bigger than me. My mom didn't like the dog because it was licking me all the time when I was a baby. But since then I liked the dog. Then we had another German Shepherd with my brothers at the house. And then another German Shepherd, boxers. And all my life I had dogs. I have a couple of dogs now. I have a black lab. His name is Dominic. And I have a corgi, which is actually my daughter, right?
I was going to say, you sounds like you only get the biggest of dogs. You didn't have any of I have a miniature golden doodle. And we used to have a bigger dog. I'm going to be honest. Sometimes the miniature golden doodle is fine. My daughters love him, but I miss the bigger dogs. I miss the ones that you can play around with and wrestle with.
Oh, so. Yeah. They get into the beach and all that, right? Yeah, the Corgi Terry is adorable too. Very fighty and a strong character. Yeah, I got involved into American Dog Society probably a year and a half ago. They reached out to me and they were, it's a charity. It's based in New York. And one of the things that they wanted to do is to have board members with different set of experience that can help them grow, develop. It was kind of a startup, Awesome. Right. So Steve Folger, the executive director, and he and I met. I did several interviews. So they liked some of my previous experience I did with several years ago with Operation Smile and my time at Citi. So I decided to join because they wanted to grow, develop the chapters, the regional chapters, bring more people in and develop the plans. Is a lot of work, to be honest, right? But I like it, right? So our mission is to educate dog parents and dog lovers, right? So more dogs get adopted, less dogs get surrendered, and we have more educated human beings, and then they don't reject the dog after 6 months after the adoption, right? So we have big plans. This is very related to HR, right? Is very based on training people. We have developed, we are still developing 8-9 models. We are building partnerships with some of the dog brands, right? So for brand of product for dogs. So there we are, right? So it's very
exciting. I love that. We're going to come back to dogs in our speed round. So hold that thought, but I promise, stay tuned. We're going to come back to it. Let's talk about hiring, because we've already gotten a little bit into how technology is impacting hiring. It's obvious that it's something that you've taken very seriously throughout your career. You've led organizations and kind of set the tone for how organizations hire. So let's start here. Whether it be for your own team or kind of your philosophy for the organizations that you work in, do you have a core hiring philosophy? Do you have something that like really like you've learned over time that resonates with you, and this is the approach you take when you go into a hiring cycle?
That's a good question. So several things come to mind, right? So I think we are, as the world evolves and companies change more and more, right? I'm focusing, in my case, right? Focusing more on building from within than hiring from the market. Of course, we will hire from the market, right? But I think it's becoming more and more relevant as companies get more complicated, right? So to hire at the campuses level, the analyst programs develop them within. They do rotations in the organization, and then they get deployed to the different areas, right? And campus program for engineering, for the business, right? So I think developing from within is critical, because it's not that easy to learn the culture of companies, right? We want to have the best culture possible. But I think once you develop someone from within, knows the processes, knows the standards, knows how things work, right? So you set the bar very high at the very earlier in their careers, right? So, and then on the lateral side, one of the things that I personally focus is, what is the skill set and the value added that those hires or that specific hire will bring to the table, right? It needs to have like a 3x, 5x effect, right? So you're bringing someone from another firm that is doing a very, very good career. So how do you see that person adding value to our firm, right? And in my case, our firm is evolving and changing all the time. And sometimes people with very respected careers don't like that. Right, so it's a challenge, right? So you need to see how and value how much that person will add to the table once the person joins, right? So that is I think a couple of things of my philosophy, right? Develop from within, and then the value added of the talent that you bring into the organization. I like a lot when I hire for HR, the learning capability, the growth capability, I think is very, very important. How much ambition that person has to develop themselves. It doesn't matter how many sacrifices the person wants to do, right? But I think it's the growth capability is very, very important. Companies are changing super fast, right, these days. Not super fast, very fast, right? But I think that learning and growth capabilities is more and more important.
Agreed. That's great. Great answer. I love that.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
What about a memorable interview experience? When I ask you about one, does anything come to mind? It could be a really bad one. It could be a great one.
Yeah, I always remember this one, right? So I was interviewing a person for a regional head role, big role, right? So, and then the person went through the interviews, presence, sharp, right? But then at some point I was doing the second interview, and then started to share, this could be more, it's kind of funny, right? Started to share some personal picture with me, right? So it's as a, oh my God. And the pictures were not that, hey, this is where I went in vacation, or a little bit more different picture, right? So I was, oh my God, I don't know, this guy is really sharing these
pictures. Like risque pictures? Like pictures you wouldn't share at work normally?
Yeah,
or what type of
pictures?
Oh my goodness.
Not that bad, but then he's like, oh my God. So yeah, well, okay, I get it, right? So, and then I think he didn't realize that. Some people don't realize because I don't know, but whatever, right? So it was.
He must have felt very comfortable with you, that's for sure.
Yeah, very comfortable, right? So, we didn't hire a person, but at the end of the day, I said to myself, well, we need something that probably make him feel very, very, very comfortable, right? So, and
before he gets comfortable really fast.
All right,
so,
yes, one of the two. Yes, yes. And then I said, oh my God, how this person will adapt with these faults that are very structured, and that's not going to work, right? So, I remember that, right?
That's funny. That is a funny story.
Yeah.
What about a favorite question? Do you have like a favorite question you like to ask that like you feel like unlocks things in an interview?
I like to hear about people's achievements, right? So, and then how those achievements translate into financial benefits, cultural growth, right? So what, how much was that impact that they create through the achievement? Particularly I ask that in senior roles, right? When we hire senior roles, we plan them to have impact across the firm, right? So I want to be very sure that they are not breaking all the walls, right? They need to break some walls, but they create the right impact in the organization, right? So yeah, I think it's a basic one, but I like it, and I like when they frame the answer beyond their span of control, right? So let me translate this. They frame the answer not only talking about, let's say, engineering organization, right? So this is the impact that they create across the firm and the different and belonging and inclusion, things like that, right? So beyond their span of control, right? So I like that.
Those are good. Those are good questions.
Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest mistake that hiring managers make in the interview? What's something that you would like, you have to coach on, or you would say, hey, look out for this?
Yeah. I think the biggest mistake is sometimes they don't prepare and read the resume well, right? So it's very basic. And I think if they spend 10 minutes, 15 minutes, at least preparing what are the questions that I should ask this person. And then, but before that, where do I need this person? What do I need this person to do for me? What do I want this person for the organization, right? And then go to the first thing I was saying, right? So what are the questions that I should ask, right? Which are the questions that I should pick from this, what Martin gave me, right? And then have the discussion with that person. I think it's really important, but sometimes we have so many things to do, many projects, initiatives, delivery, presentations, and so on, that sometimes managers, and sometimes with experience, miss the point, right? So, yeah.
Good advice. What about when you miss? Can you look back on a theme of when you made the wrong hire? You wish I would have done this, or is there any type of themes there?
Probably focus. Yes, probably I focus in some of the cases too much on potential, right? So meaning that, hey, this person is good, it's going to grow, it's going to develop, right? But I didn't weigh that much on adaptability and resiliency, right? So I didn't know at that moment, but now with the years, right, you learn. But I think I was very avid, probably focused on potential. But I think
you need to know what they can do right now, yeah, too. Otherwise, they won't reach that potential, right?
Because yes, and it's for HR, and then yeah, but then companies start shifting, right? And then restructuring and sales and the integrations and all that. And some people, when things get moved all the time, they get a little scared or they get confused, right? So yeah, adaptability and resiliency are becoming more important as well. Yeah.
Good. I love that. Good stuff. I was taking a little bit of a different direction.
Yeah.
What are you working on right now that you're really excited about? Something that gets you out of bed in the morning. What's kind of the initiative or project you're working on that you're really pumped about?
Yeah. Yeah. Right now we're very busy with closing the year, right? So that's a given.
That's not very fun, though.
Yeah, no. but yeah, it's a good process so far. I think one of the pieces that I really like is something that we started at the beginning of 2023. And from what I can say is, well, we are changing operating model of the firm, right? Being more focused on platforms and products, right? And I think, which is for good, right? For good of the firm to become more efficient, more nimble, more flatter organization, more focused on individual P&Ls and so on. That's all I can say. But but I think it's there is a very important people component there, which is something I like very much, right? So we are operating this way now, right? And we're gonna move. We're going to cross the river and we're going to operate in a different way. We are not changing what we sell. We are not changing our products, right? But we're going to operate in a different way of working, right? So it's a change in our ways of working, but that results in a lot of upskilling and reskilling our talent, right? Do we have the talent, right, to work in that new model? Do we have the right skill set, right, for the good talent that we have? Do we need to acquire a different talent? How much do we need to reskill and upskill our people so we are successful? It's not only the person being successful, it's the company being successful in the new model, right? So there's a lot of upskilling, reskilling, learning, development, right? Communications and change management, which is has been a lot of work, but it's fantastic, right? To shift from one. To shift and move from one place to another from a people perspective is a very challenging one. You don't see that type of challenges that often, right? Unless you're doing a merge or divestitures and things like that. So that's one of the things that I like very much on the work we are doing. I was involved in the design of how and the plan on how to do that. Then we are executing, right? So the whole department, right? So it's it stretches you on how you need to work, how you need to deliver more because you haven't done that before. So you need to reskill yourself to do that, right? So yeah, that's what I like. So the journey, yes.
I love that. Yeah, hey, listen, something that pushes you out of your comfort zone and has wide impact and can make a big difference in the organization. That's the type of stuff that everybody loves to work on. So it sounds like you've got some incredible initiatives in front of you.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear how they turn out. What about, do you have a recent book you read or any content you've taken in, like a show or a movie that you loved or you want to recommend to our listeners?
Two. There is one about AI. I need to check, but it was a little long. It's one of our engineers recommended that to me. Is how the world will be 20-25 years from now, right, is about AI revolution, right? It's a basic one. It was a little dense, but it's good. It shows you some of the possibilities and then how all this movement that is happening now was created 10 years ago, 15 years ago with some investments and all that, right? So, and the normal sentiment about being afraid of what AI could cause and all the articles being focused on that versus all the different opportunities. Then the other book, and we did a book club at the office, right? It was good. It is called Cultures of Growth, right? So you have what is the type of culture you want to have in your company? And then there are I'm going to share the names. This author did analysis of several firms and how many of them, by developing a culture of growth, giving opportunity, learning, being more tolerant, right, being more empathetic, overcome their success and existence over the years, versus the other type of culture, right, which is more focused on ego and more autocratic, and at the end of the day, those companies don't succeed over time, right? So that was very good. Cultures of Growth, and
that's by Mary Murphy. Cultures of Growth. I just looked that up.
Yeah.
So you enjoyed that one. You did that for a book club at work?
Of course. Yeah.
We have a book club at work too. We started a long time ago. We actually need to pick up a new book going into next year. But I find that type of getting together, sharing your thoughts, you know, it's a really great thing, especially for a good professional book, right? That can help your organization, can help move your organization. And one of the things that we tried to do is make sure it was very action oriented. So if there's things that we liked out of the book, what are some things that we can implement and take away that we can implement into the organization? Yeah. So I highly recommend book clubs at work. All right, last question, Martin. If you could give yourself, your 20-year-old self, advice that you didn't know then but that you know now, what would it be?
Advice. Advice to me. Yeah, I would say don't be afraid. Just jump and move forward, right? So I think I'm originally from Peru. I was born and raised there. Started my career in HR there. Then I move around, right? So, and sometimes it's a big change when you move your family and all that. Create a lot of shockwaves, right? But I think at the end of the day, the human beings, the resiliency and the adaptability and the desire to move forward it helps you overcome any challenge that you could face, right? So, and I need to recognize I was a little afraid at some points, right, in my life, right? So what's going to happen? I think kids are going to get used to this. Tons of questions, right, about what could happen instead of focusing on you can deliver and you will, right? So, yeah, I think that's it.
Love that. Don't be afraid. Just jump.
Yeah.
All right. I want to move to our lightning round. So I'm gonna do this in two parts because there's two different areas that I want to dive into. So I just want you to tell me the first response or reaction that comes to your mind, okay?
Okay.
Favorite Peruvian food?
I want to say ceviche.
Ceviche. Do you think it's the best Latin American cuisine? Because I've had many people come in here from different countries and they do say Peru.
No doubt about it.
No doubt about it. I love that pride.
Yeah, a lot of great restaurants, right? So in Miami too, right? Yeah.
I'm going to need a good recommendation. What's the best Peruvian restaurant in Miami?
Oh, well, I have always been very faithful and loyal to Ceviche 15, right? So it's Chipoco, the owner. I remember when he started, right? So he did a pretty good job, right? So he
deserves Ceviche 105. We will write that down. That'll be in the show notes. Yeah. What about first time visiting Peru, what's one thing you have to go see? Is it Machu Picchu or is there something else?
No. I would do first. You could do Machu Picchu first. You can go to Cusco first and then come back to Lima and spend there probably 3 days, a culinary tour, right? So you go to the restaurants and then enjoy the real food, right? Not the other way around. I think it's better when you come back
Yeah, you want to work up the appetite go enjoy it, right?
Oh, yes. The only thing, because friends of mine tried to go to Peru and then said to me, I'm going to Peru. I want to go to Central and these restaurants. I said to them, well, did you guys book in advance? Because they became very popular, right? So you need to book.
You got to do it months in advance, huh?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Good advice. All right. We're going to go dog side of this now. What's your favorite thing to do with your dogs?
I like to walk with them, right? I like to play with Cherry because she's little, right, with the ball, and then she likes that. But I really like to spend time with them. One thing that I love with Dominic, the big lab, is when I go to watch TV at the bedroom, right? He jumps over the bed and keeps you warm, and he's a big, big, big boy, right? So I love that, yeah.
Love it. What is the most expensive thing any one of your dogs has ruined?
I think Cherry did something to one of the rugs we used to have here, right? So it was expensive, right? So yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have a favorite fictional dog?
No, I always like the labs. I always like
the labs.
Yeah.
So Air Bud, we're gonna give you Air Bud. He played basketball. He was a golden retriever, I think, or a lab.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. If you had to recommend a breed of dog for somebody that's never owned a dog before, what would you recommend?
How much space you have? Yeah. Is that part of the
apartment in New York City?
Maybe a Dodge Hound. Yeah. A little.
Dachshund?
Yeah.
Wiener dog.
Wiener dog. Yeah. The wiener dog.
Have you ever had one?
No. My wife.
What's so great about them? They're just obedient and.
Yeah. They're very obedient. They're very nice. Very loyal. Very little, right? So you can put it in the back and then walk around the city and go everywhere.
Take it off.
Yeah.
Are your dogs with you in New York or do they stay in Florida?
The two are staying in Florida, but we are taking the black lab to New York in February, right? So, yeah.
All right. So bundle him up. You better get him a sweater.
All right. Yeah. He'll love the city. He's going to walk a lot.
Martin, I really appreciate you coming on. We covered a wide range of topics. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate the time. Looking forward to meeting in person.
Excellent.
Talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.